All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of The Canucks Conversation, brought to you as always by the 2024 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps. The BZ4X will get you through it all. And of course, we are coming to you from the iconic Wall Center in downtown Vancouver. Looking for your next meeting space? Contact the Wall Center for all your event needs at sales@wallcenter.com. Dave Guadrelli alongside Harmon Dial. Grady Sass is our producer. He is the man at the controls. And Harmon, we've got an absolutely, speaking of electric, electric victory for the Vancouver Canucks. Grady, pull it up right away. Rick Tocchet high-fiving the fans on his walk through the tunnel. I'm sorry. Like, I know we're supposed to be impartial, all that. I ran through a wall.
I love that. I mean, it was funny too, hearing Tocchet. I think he was only half joking. I think he was half serious too, that he didn't love seeing that reaction back because he likes to be even keeled and doesn't like to get too high or low. Look, Rick.
Here it is. Yeah, here it is. Look at that. Look at that. I'm sorry. Yes, as you were saying,
he's so pumped up. I'm giving Rick a break.
Totally.
Be easy on yourself.
Oh, totally.
After a victory like that, coming back like that.
And that was a clean high five. Like, it's kind of hard to make it, like, you know, people sometimes, you're standing, you miss sometimes. It's like one of those.
Tocchet would never miss.
Well, Tocchet doesn't miss, but that's what I'm saying is he had to reach for that. He had to reach for that. And it was crisp. Like, you also have to think those fans did their part too. If you're out there, if you were the person that Rick Tocchet high-fived, I saw some people wondering if their hands would be hurting after that. That was a hard high five. That was a crisp high five. I don't know. If I were talking, I had to give a post-game press conference about my high fives, I'd say my only regret is not that there were only two fans there.
Yeah, owner Quads needs to come in and mandate high fives after every playoff victory.
Did you see that? The Baltimore Orioles owner was throwing beers at fans.
No, I didn't see that.
He was buying beers for them and throwing them into the crowd, and he was like shotgunning with the fans. That's the kind of owner I'd be.
That's awesome.
Not to mention that he's investing in the team, but we're not talking baseball today. We are talking about the Canucks' Game 1 victory over those Edmonton Oilers. A massive win in this series. And our opening segment is brought to you by our friends over at 4 Winds Brewing. More specifically, the Juxtapose IPA. Looking for something hoppy for your fridge this weekend? It's nice and sunny out, folks. We recommend you check out the 4 Winds Juxtapose IPA, a two-time silver there it is, medal winner at the World Beer Cup. This juicy IPA is tropical and funky at the same time. Available at liquor stores across the province or for home delivery anywhere in BC through the online shop at 4windsbrewing.ca. Beautiful can, locally owned and operated in Delta, British Columbia. 4windsbrewing.ca is the website. Harm, it's hard to figure out where we're going to start when we recap this game. The Vancouver Canucks were down 4-1 in this game. They came back. They won. My Bet365 bet of the day was correct yet again. I do not miss. 5-4 is your final score, with the Canucks outshooting the Edmonton Oilers 24-18. Let's start in the first period. Do you want to just go goal by goal?
Yeah, let's do it.
Sound like an appropriate way to do it? Okay, good. And folks, thanks to everybody in the YouTube live chat that's contributing. Be sure to keep it coming in. We want to hear from you. Anyone else is going to be later in the show. We're going to be joined by Frank Saravalli. He's going to join us for anyone else. It's an in-studio edition of anyone else with Frank Saravalli. So it's going to be a good time. Okay, Harm, let's start with Ian Cole. He's a big part of this story, much less of a big part of this story than I think he would have hoped. Or I worded that incorrectly. I mean, he could have been a much bigger part of this story than he actually is. He is still a part of the story, so we're going to talk about him. In our series mega preview, which, folks, you should have listened to it already. If you haven't, go back and listen to it. The importance was don't take penalties. Don't take penalties against this Oilers team, which went 9-for-20 in the opening round against those LA Kings. Don't take penalties against them. Don't do that. Ian Cole hops over the boards. Too many men. They're on the penalty kill. But because it was a too many men penalty, Ian Cole's not in the box. Ian Cole's out on the ice killing the penalty. Or at least he was supposed to be out there killing the penalty. He loses his man a bit. And I get it. Like, the Oilers power play is just really good. And I know there was a lot of people on Twitter being like, Ian Cole's not covering anybody. Yes and no. He is shifting toward Nugent Hopkins down low on the left side there. Yes, he should have moved to Hyman. But if he drifts off too much, in his mind, he's probably thinking, well, Nugent Hopkins can then just walk in front, create new sorts of space. Yeah, he should have had Hyman, but again, yes, the goal was his fault. The penalty was obviously his fault. The goal ultimately is his fault as well, but also you don't fault all your penalty killers each time a power play goal goes in when you're facing the Edmonton Oilers.
I also think the mistake started beforehand because yep. the biggest fault there was staying on the ice too long, in my opinion. Mm. It was a 91-second shift by the time that he got scored on. So of course he had a difficult time taking the passing lane away. I don't think he was in the worst position in that spot, but a fresh Ian Cole takes that pass away. Instead, I believe it went through his leg.
Yes. Yes.
I think that's a result of earlier on the shift. It's also ironic because he started the penalty kill really strong. He had a couple of,
and rush.
He clears. Well, that's where I was saying he got into a little bit of trouble because in that situation, he'd already been on the ice for quite a while.
Yeah.
I think DiGiuseppe was with him on the potential two-on-one. Look, if that's JT Miller, if that's Elias Pettersson there, yes, take that gamble.
What are you trying to say about that's Phil a high DiGiuseppe? Percentage play. I'm just joking. I know.
You've got to, like, it's game management in that situation, right?
Absolutely. And that's something a veteran player you'd think would immediately recognize.
Yeah, so even in the Nashville series, Cole was outstanding, but the one time that he ran into a little bit of trouble was getting caught up the ice just because he doesn't have the foot speed to get back. So in that situation, he had an easy clear and change opportunity.
Yeah.
And at that point, I legitimately, like in my notes, I had Cole great PK shift up until that point.
Yep.
But he decided to join the play, try and make it a 2-on-1. Then he can't get the change. Then he's gassed. I think it's the sequence leading up to the goal that causes the breakdown more than just, oh, he didn't take the passing lane away because he was gassed at that point.
Okay.
There was also two failed clearing attempts right before that goal. And if that puck gets out, then perhaps the formation down low for the Oilers looks a little different.
So that was 1-for-1. The Oilers only got one power play. So there's something. If we go back to our keys to victory, it was discipline. Don't put the Oilers in the power play. Canucks did it once. The Oilers made the play. The Oilers have 100% success rate on the power play in this series. But from there, the Canucks do not get into any penalty trouble. They do not take any penalties. The Oilers, on the other hand, take 3. Canucks power play goes 0-for-3. Again, part of the story, not the story in this one. We'll talk about it. I'm sure it'll get brought up later. Let's not talk about the Canucks power play right now. Let's go to the second goal, which came off the stick of Matias Ekholm, assisted by Leon Draisaitl, who again is a part of the story. And we'll talk about Leon Draisaitl a little bit later. But what do you think of that goal from Ekholm?
Another mistake starting with Ian Cole, right? Yep. He was in a spot where puck gets to him, and I'm sure he's thinking, I'm sort of in a dangerous spot. I can feel Ryan Nugent-Hopkins breathing down my neck. I just want to get this puck out of harm's way. He just didn't realize that Draisaitl was on the other side. Yeah. So he banked it right to him. That's a tough turnover. And look, before we really dissect that goal, I want to open up a conversation about Cole as a whole, especially because I think in the aftermath, especially if the Canucks lost, a lot of people would have said, you got to take him out of the lineup. You got to draw Juleson back in. And even as the Canucks were down 4-1, and I was preparing myself, I was mentally thinking, oh boy, I'm going to have to come on the show here today and defend Ian Cole and say, yeah, that was a brutal game, but I'm not taking him out of the lineup. Now that they win, it's a lot easier for me to make that case.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, I'm not taking Ian Cole out of the lineup after one bad game like that.
The only two players that I think you might say, okay, we're taking these players out if the Canucks lost, is Archer Shelovs and Ian Cole. Canucks go on to win the game. I don't think either of those guys comes out of the lineup.
Well, also, like, did we forget how great Cole was in the first round against Nashville?
Thank you. And for spurts in this game too, right? Like, he wasn't awful for 60 minutes. He had some strong shifts as the game went on. You wrote,
I mean, he had the bank shot to Joshua that that sparked that goal.
Exactly. Absolutely. And you had it in your notes that Ian Cole had some good PK up until that point. In my notes, I wrote Canucks dominant every second Ian Cole wasn't on the ice. That was how I looked at that game. That wasn't the case toward the end of the game.
For sure.
They were just dominant at that point. What did I have here?
The other point just to circle back on that discussion was also just, did we also forget that Noah Juleson in the one game that he appeared got lit up by Philip Forsberg?
Yes.
Like, there's no guarantee that the guy drawing into the lineup is going to be perfect, especially when he hasn't played a lot in the last 2 or 3 weeks. Now, of course, there's going to be a bit of a microscope on Cole in game two. He's going to need to be a lot better, but I'm giving a veteran player like that the benefit of the doubt and keeping him in the lineup.
Okay, so another giveaway by Ian Cole for the Matias Ekholm goal, which was 2-0. I thought, and I mean at 5-on-5, the Canucks were obviously the better team in that game, but I know that the second period is going to be where the spotlight is shone on that, where they just came out, they dominated in the second. I thought they dominated in the third as well. I thought they were really good in the first. I wouldn't use the word dominating per se, but I thought they were really good in the first, and then that Ekholm goal went in. Like, I thought the Canucks were good at that point. I thought they were playing really well after that power play goal early on in the game.
I didn't love their first period, to be totally honest. I thought they were a little bit sloppy. I thought they turned the puck over in the first several minutes. I think in the second half of the first period, they started to find their game, and I was thinking, okay, they're settled. They're playing well. But put it this way, I think they deserve to be down 2-0 heading into the
you did,
intermission.
Eh?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Again, you make mistakes like that against players of that caliber when Leon Draisaitl is on the ice, you're going to pay the price for it.
This is such a small part of the conversation, so let's not get hung up on it. But I thought they deserved to maybe be down by one goal, not just because they played well territorial, but again, Stuart Skinner makes his best save of the game on that Connor Garland breakaway.
Yeah, that's
so fair. I was looking at it and just saying, okay, they created some chances. They had some good looks. Stuart Skinner sucks, so hopefully one of these is going to go in. That came later in the game.
They played really well in the first period.
Fair enough.
That was my overall takeaway. I think you've got a point there that maybe they didn't deserve to be down by two goals, maybe one.
Sure,
but sure. I don't think it was their best period.
Slight margins, doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. What does matter in the grand scheme of things is the Canucks coming out in the second period with their foot on the gas and Dakota Joshua scoring 53 seconds into the period with Elias Lindholm and Ian Cole setting up the goal. Dakota Joshua, big game Dak, playoff D, whatever you want to call him. Mr. Game 1, I think Frank threw out there. So Frank will be joining us soon here. But Mr. Game 1, Dakota Joshua scores to bring the Canucks within one at that point. And then again, that was the period where I think it's much more true that the Canucks were dominant in the second period. Then the goals went against them, Like, then the puck luck wasn't there and the bounces went against them despite controlling territorially, despite giving the Oilers defense fits on the forecheck all night. That's a huge part of this story. It's a big part of the story when it comes to shutting down Connor McDavid. As we said in our mega preview, which everybody's obviously listened to at this point, we said that was going to be super important for shutting down Connor McDavid, was just making him play in the defensive end. And that's what the Canucks forecheck did last night. Do you want to touch on that now, or do you want to keep going on these goals?
Let's touch on that McDavid thing, because
let's do it.
I was really trying to figure out why it felt like Edmonton, even when they did have an opportunity to make a clean breakout, because obviously on a lot of those shifts, the Miller line or whoever was out there against McDavid, they did give Edmonton's defensemen some headaches. But even when Edmonton had an opportunity to get a set breakout going, they never looked to give McDavid the puck to transport through the neutral zone.
Yes.
It was so strange.
It was weird.
Really weird. I mean, even one of the goals, the Hyman one, actually happened as a result of the Canucks thinking McDavid was going to get the puck in stride and then them going to Hyman instead. Yeah. Because what you'll notice on that play is it's a sort of set breakout. McDavid is winding up on the right side, and he almost worked as a decoy on that goal because Besser was on that weak side.
Yes.
where Hyman had some space. Besser was, I don't want to say cheating, but he was a little bit further toward the middle, and there was space on that flank for Hyman to carry the puck up the wing uncontested when the Oilers hit the weak side instead of McDavid.
Yes.
And then what you'll notice is Tyler Myers figured that they were going to feed McDavid, so he was in the middle of the ice instead of the right side. It was tough for him to then close the gap on Hyman. Hyman had some extra space. Obviously, he got fortunate with the puck deflecting off Myers' stick as well, fooling Sheila there. But it was really strange. They never went to McDavid. I think the Canucks did an exceptional job of forcing him to defend in his own zone. And that's another thing that stood out was when Miller controlled the puck down low, or that line as a whole did, McDavid wasn't able to strip pucks back.
Yes.
Defensively down low. He wasn't able to create those changes of possession. The Canucks did a pretty good job of making sure that they didn't turn the puck over. There was one that Joshua had in the first period, but outside of that, they were really clean and managing the puck when 97 was on the ice. And zero shots on goal. It's the first time he's been limited to that extent in a playoff game. And the other thing I'll point out, and credit to Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff, because this was a bit of a ballsy decision, is they used the Susie Myers pair,
yes, sir,
head-to-head against Connor McDavid instead of Quinn Hughes and Philip Peronik. And you look at the numbers, and I'm just going to come out and say this. I think Carson Susie was the unsung hero of that victory.
Oh, undoubtedly. I think there's a few guys you can give it to, but Carson Susie is certainly one of them.
Even strength, nearly 10 minutes head-to-head against McDavid. McDavid line generates just 3 shots on goal, 0 high-danger chances, and the Canucks win 2-1 in terms of the even strength goal differential battle. Plus, he has the 2 assists, pinching up the wall to keep the play alive on Elias Lindholm's 4-2 goal, which gave the Canucks some life, gave them some momentum towards the end of that second period there. And then what a beautiful, gorgeous pass to hit Besser cross seam, yes, to then lead to Miller's tip goal. And the biggest key was Susie ripping the puck east-west like that. Was you could see him shoulder checking before he got the puck. He knew what he was going to do with the puck before he got it. That's something that Tocchet speaks a lot about, is you don't want to telegraph your decision. Got to be bang, bang, make that next play. And McDavid was just off in getting his stick into that lane to pick it off. The reason he was a fraction of a second late is because Susie instantaneously made that pass. What a terrific play by him.
Yeah. When it came to shutting down McDavid, the Miller line was brilliant in that matchup. Again, the takeaway that I texted you was Darnell Nurse is worse than I thought he was. He had an awful game. So did Cody Ceci. Canucks absolutely exposed that pairing. You had something on that pairing. Do you want to say that now, or do you want to save it for anyone else?
Do you want to go through the comeback, or...
I feel like we're going to keep stopping because, you know what? Give the CC thing. I want to talk about Shelov's next, because now we've talked about all 4 Oilers goals. So I want to talk about Shelov's angle. But you talk about that pairing.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's no way of getting around it. That pair got exposed, dominated, obliterated. they may as well have worn Canucks jerseys outside of CeCe's fortuitous point shot goal, because it was brutal out there on the ice for four even strength goals. Vancouver only scored five. I shouldn't say only, but considering they scored five, you're on the ice for four of them. That's a pretty brutal look right off the bat. And it isn't just a case of sometimes you get tagged for goals against, but you're not actually responsible, or you were playing pretty well. The Canucks had a 12-1 advantage in 5-on-5 scoring chances with Darnell Nurse on the ice. And the reason this is a problem from an Oilers perspective, and the reason this gives the Canucks an opportunity to grab this series and win it if they can continue operating to this level against this pair, is it'd be one thing if Nurse and CeCe have struggled in the sense of every defense pair has an off night once in a while. No, this has been a consistent theme for this pair in high leverage playoff moments. Yep. For this postseason as a whole, they've only controlled 37% of 5-on-5 expected goals. So they're getting pummeled the entire time. Their goal differential for the playoffs so far is 7-3 at 5-on-5. And then you look back at the history of previous playoff runs for Edmonton. In the second round against Vegas last year, we mentioned it in our preview show. This was the pair to take advantage of. Vegas outscored Edmonton 7-2 with the Nurse CeCe pair on the ice. And then Bag Milk pointed this out before we came into the studio. He said, look up the numbers of the Colorado series when the Oilers got swept in the 2022 Western Conference Final. Darnell Nurse, that pair on the ice, outscored 9-3 at 5-on-5 in a four-game series. Mind you, nine goals against at 5-on-5. That's the biggest weakness and concern that you have from an Oilers perspective, and that's the biggest thing that you want to continue taking advantage of if you're sitting in the Canucks situation.
Okay, can I talk about She Loves?
Absolutely.
A lot of good stuff in the YouTube live chat, folks. It's a high-energy edition of Canucks Conversation, and it's really good. And we're going to explain it. We're going to explain the goal from JT Miller, because he talked about practicing that. We'll get to that in a second. I want to talk about Archer Shelov's in that game, because there was some discourse around Archer Shelov's. No disrespect. Well, maybe a little disrespect. I've said that a lot in the past couple of weeks, because I don't mean to disrespect people. Sometimes people just say dumb things.
No disrespect, and then you go on to absolutely body whoever you're referring to.
Okay, so slight disrespect. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I like him most of the time, and I still like him. I don't dislike him. But Kelly Rudy on the broadcast last night. No disrespect.
Yeah, no disrespect. Kelly's actually a very nice guy.
Kelly is awesome. I really like Kelly Rudy. So it's not disrespectful. I kindly disagree with the brain dead take from Kelly that Casey DeSmith should have come in for the third period. Did you watch? Did you see that because you were at the game? Second intermission. He's like, and he was right about this. He said, yeah, you know, maybe one of those goals is on Shelov's. I don't really pin it on the kid. And he even defended the one goal that everyone said was Shelov's fault. He goes, I don't really think it was his fault. And I was like, okay, good segment, Kelly. And then it ends with, yeah, but I'd put DeSmith in net for the third. And I'm like, what are we talking about here? Like, what are we doing? Casey DeSmith to start the third period. Really? After you just said, yeah, none of those goals actually were on Archer Shelov's. I think one of them was, but the former goalie, who I think we should listen to on this, said none. But then he pivots and goes, yeah, Casey DeSmith, get him in there for the third. Next game, all this talk. This is Archer Shelov's crease, and it's not leaving Archer Shelov's skates. He is staying in that Vancouver goal crease. He starts game two. There's no doubt in my mind that they're going to go back to Shelov's. The one thing I will say about Shelov's, and again, all in good fun. Sorry, Kelly. The one thing I'll say about Shelov's is the thing that he struggled with a lot, and I talked to Cody Sievertson, shout out to him. The one thing Shelov struggled with a lot in Abbotsford and just throughout his professional career is tip shots. Sometimes he slides a bit, right? Casey Smith had his troubles with those too, but those shots through traffic, those tipped shots, sometimes Shelov's has trouble reacting to the tip. But man, think about early on, the Oilers were getting pretty damn close to him, and he was making some five alarm saves early on in that game. He was there for you. He was, I won't say really good. According to National Stat Trick, 1.40 was the expected goals for the Edmonton Oilers. Obviously, he ends up letting in four. That's not a great performance from Archer Shelov's. But I strongly disagree with the idea that there even needs to be a discussion about Casey DeSmith coming in for the next game.
Can you break down for the listeners your thought process on some of those goals against and why they weren't Shelov's fault? Because I agree with you, but I saw a lot of discourse saying, people were blaming him for three of the four goals, for example.
Yeah, and again, people are stupid and they're allowed to be wrong, right? So let's break it down. Okay, let's go to this first one. And for those on the YouTube show, sorry, I'm just watching it. We didn't tell Grady we were going to do this, so we don't have the B-roll or anything. But this first one, obviously, we've already broken that down. That's the penalty kill. Zach Hyman's going to score that on basically any goalie in the NHL. Okay, there's one goal, not his fault.
Just can't let that pass through.
That's all it comes down to. Problem. Yeah, you can't let that east-west movement. They've been talking about that all season long. Okay, this Ekholm goal. That's just a bad turnover. Did that deflect off anyone? Do I have a replay here? Oh, no, that was the Cole one that went off the boards. And then, so that puck just should have got out through a couple bodies. That one, I think, is one Shelov's could have saved. Not his fault. The turnover and the chances, as Grady brought up, a couple chances before that to get the puck out. Didn't get the puck out. Again, is that on Shelov's? No. Could he have saved it? Yeah, probably. It's not like a no chance like the Hyman one. Okay, Cody Ceci's goal here. This is the one that actually did deflect off Ian Cole, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that one, again, not Shelov's fault, but one thing I'd like to see him work on is adjusting to those redirects, right? So the reason I brought this up is because the goals that he let in, people are going to look at them and say, yo, totally not his fault at all. This is a trend with Shelov's of not being able to read those redirects. The answer is not to put in Casey DeSmith. The answer is to let Shelov's continue to grow and give him these opportunities. Because if you recall, he had a performance like this against Nashville. He had a performance like this against Nashville where wasn't his best game. And then he came out and had his best game, right? Like, that's what it comes down to for me is you give the kid another chance here. You don't immediately go back to DeSmith because then you just get into this weird mojo of, okay, well, if we don't like what we see from DeSmith and we put Shelov's back in, you get into this weird little thing where it's, okay, there's seeds of doubt now, whether you like it or not. Those seeds of doubt that have been planted in the Edmonton side, you have the chance to give it to your own side if you go ahead and throw DeSmith in. Shelov's is the guy they're all rallying around right now. I don't see any Casey DeSmith shirts being sold in the team store. Again, no disrespect to Casey DeSmith, but this team is rallying around Archer Shelov's. He was fine last night. He got you the win. Let's also not forget those great saves he made in the first period. And again, in the third period, when they really needed him, Shelov's was there. Shelov's stood tall in that third period. It wasn't like the Oilers, despite what they said post-game about, oh, yeah, we gave them that game. McDavid's throwing out lucky bounces. Oh, funny goals, lucky bounces. Get out of here. Your team got outplayed, categorically outplayed. That's what it came down to in the end of the day. I'm getting sidetracked a little bit, but I don't know. Stay with Shelov's. It's simple to me. Shelov's was good in that game. Where am I? The 4-1.
Myers goal. One. The tip off his stick.
Exactly. And Grady just said it. Like, Myers' stick gets in there. Again, I wrote this in Instant Reaction Harm. I have been covering Archer Shelov since he was drafted. The first thing that anybody said to me, not going to say who, but someone in the know, when the Canucks drafted Shelov's, said, actually, no, I'll tell you, it was Ian Clark. The first thing Ian Clark told me about Archer Shelov's was he has all these raw tools. We have to teach him a lot. But that, I wrote a story about it. That was the time Ian Clark told me I can teach technique in a weekend. If you give me someone with raw tools, he calls them wild horses. If you give me a goalie like that, I can mold them into something. Ian Clark's words. You can go read the story. It's still up on Canucks Army, of course.
That is such a banger of a quote, by the way.
Yeah.
I could teach technique in a week. And that's...
But that was in the headline.
Clark is the only guy that can actually deliver on that too, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's the best. And I even asked him, like, if he was okay with me using that in the headline. Because, like, he prefaced it by saying, like, you know, I shouldn't say this. Like, sometimes people don't like when I say this, but I can teach technique in a weekend. And I was like, can I please put that in the headline? And yep, we did it. And Ian Clark's an absolute beauty, as people in the chat are saying as well. What I was getting at was the first thing Ian told me about Shelov's was that this kid's ability to cover the bottom of the net with his legs, because he is so athletic, he's so flexible. Like, he drops into the butterfly in the blink of an eye, and he can cover the entire bottom of the net with his pads. And that early on, when Shelov's that wild horse, that's what he leaned on. low goals didn't go in on Shelovs very often because he was so good at covering the bottom of the net. What happened there is the release, and I think Hockey Night in Canada talked about this, the release on Hyman's shot had Shelovs thinking it was going to be high because, hey, it probably was, but then when Meyer's stick comes down on it, it's going along. Yes, Hyman doesn't get nearly enough on it. So Shelovs is reacting to reading the blade where he thinks the puck is going to go. And great, yeah, you play goal. Well, and
that's why you saw him not being able to get down in time and seal that butterfly down to the ice, right?
Which he's just so good at. Like, he's so good at it.
Oh, and it's so, he stretches it out far and it seals quick. Very similar to what you see with Thatcher Demko. You can see so much of Demko's game in Shelovs' game, which is the Ian Clark effect.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. And that's the thing, is he's not thinking it's going to go on the ice. So again, that goal, absolutely not on Shelovs. Like, 19-year-old Shelovs could have stopped that. Sixth-round pick, remember him in his draft year? Wearing the bow tie for his draft?
Yeah.
I don't remember the bow tie. But wore a bow tie. That's actually such a Shelovs type.
Oh, I love his
laid-back Latvian. And credit to Simpson on the broadcast. He kind of disagreed with what Rudy was saying, and that, you know what, stick with the kid. We kind of saw the similar game script play out in Nashville where the Canucks were down and they rallied around him. And, you know, sometimes your goaltender is going to give your team the best chance to win. If he lets in a couple ones that he should have had maybe earlier on in the game, well, now your team's going to come back and pick you up. And that's what the Canucks did. And push came to shove, he made the saves when he had to, and he protected the lead.
That is their goalie. That is their goal. Grady, do you agree with me that they should go to Shelovs for the next game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Fully agree.
You agree?
Okay. Speaking of goaltending,
and it's not like he was fatigued, right? They had four full days off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think he'll be ready to go tomorrow. Okay.
And he's shown he can handle the mental pressure.
Absolutely.
Speaking of goaltending, I think we have to have a discussion about Mr. Stuart Skinner
it's
there.
It's time to start a dialogue about Stuart Skinner.
Because here's the thing, too. He started sharp. You mentioned it in the first period. At times in the second period, he made some terrific saves. He was steady in the first round against LA. Since his rough first 6 weeks of the season, he's been on point for the Oilers. And then he just imploded as the Canucks started applying pressure. I mean, I look back at a lot of those goals. Obviously, the Lindholm one goes in off his own goal stick. The JT Miller tip goal, by the way, seeing it from the press box, you could tell for so long that Miller wanted that puck. And I know he deflected it from a ridiculous angle, but Skinner's got to seal that post, in my opinion.
Oh, undoubtedly. He should have had that. And it's a great goal, but he should have had that.
And then to get fooled by Garland on that play. Smart play by Garland, of course, faking the slapper, but from that angle, that type of shot.
I just went for lunch with Jay and Bagged Milk, okay? And I was explaining to them that goal that Skinner let in was identical to the first goal that Shelovs ever let in his NHL career. NHL debut against the New York Rangers, Mika Zibanejad quite clearly knew, okay, this is a young goalie playing his first NHL game in net. I'm going to do this. Skates in on the side, fakes a slapper, gets Shelovs to bite. Then he has to shift because Zibanejad faked the slapper and he slides it in along the ice. That's the first goal Shelovs let in. What happened after that? That's never going to happen again. Well, I'm not letting that happen again.
This was even worse because Garland's was from an even worse angle than the Zibanejad one against Shelovs last
season. It was.
I think he thought Garland was going to go wrap around, so he started to shift back, and what that does is it just opens up the five hole.
Yeah.
Let's hear from Skinner quickly here on the next comeback.
I thought we definitely gave them this one, but I think you know, we know that it's going to be a long series. It's that's how playoffs is. You got to win four in order to keep it going. So they're up one right now, and we know that we can beat these guys. I mean, obviously they beat us five games in a row this season, or this year, I guess you should say. But you know, I think that gives us a lot of fire for ourselves just to try to come back and you know, get back in the series right away here.
Okay, so I need to know, was it unprompted that he brought up the five straight losses?
I wasn't in the room, so...
Well, you talk about seeds... Hey, you were there, right, Frank? Sorry, I know your mic's off and we haven't even introduced you yet, but you're sitting beside me. Did he bring that up unprompted? The five straight losses to the Canucks?
I can't remember.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare.
PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
All right.
If you really wanted to know, you should have done the homework, Quads.
Whatever. I know. I'm just saying those seeds of doubt.
I think he did.
But I think don't... so, too.
Does it?
It better fits just, my narrative.
Yeah, I was going to say I don't think it matters at all. But
of course it matters. If he brought it up unprompted?
I don't think it matters.
Oh my gosh. What are we talking? Guys, we're talking about the seeds of doubt being planted in the minds of the Edmonton Oilers. Having to answer
I was
questions.
In their dressing room last night. I can tell you that there is zero doubt. Like less than zero.
I flat out don't believe that. They've got you fooled, Frank.
I mean, not to say that that's not possible, but I've been in a billion hockey locker rooms and I've seen some crushing losses and that didn't even register to them.
I disagree. I've been in three locker rooms, so take that. The Canucks home visiting locker room and then the visiting locker room in Edmonton.
Well traveled.
I was going to say.
Okay, Frank's going to join us. Let's get to a quick ad break. Harmon is going to tell you about the Daily Faceoff Parlay Challenge, and then I have a word from a sponsor. Then we're going to get to Mr. Frank Saravalli.
Get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions, pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards while each round's champs pocket cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go.
Okay, now a message from the government of British Columbia. Help starts here.gov.bc.ca. We've all heard of the overdose crisis, also known as the toxic drug crisis, but did you know that it affects men disproportionately? Last year, 78% of people dying here in BC were men, and the majority were 30 to 59 years old. It's not easy to struggle with addiction, and the stigma around it can make it harder for people to reach out for help, but there is help and support available. Every journey is different, and the thing that helps might not be the same for everyone. So when someone does reach out, be compassionate and have open, non-judgmental conversations. We here at Canucks Conversation want to be part of the solution, so if you or someone you care about is struggling, you can find support and services near you at helpstartshere.gov.bc.ca. You can also watch powerful real-life stories of recovery on the Help Starts Here website. Okay. Frank's had to sit through a few ad reads. There's one more coming. And Frank, I did it just for you. Frank Saravalli is brought to you by our friends over at Wendy's. It takes hard work and determination to bring home the cup. Luckily, all you need to do to bring home Wendy's rewards is eat. Just download the Wendy's app, place your favorite order, and you'll be well on the road to victory. And by victory, we mean free food, obviously. And while you're racking up rewards points and eating your way through the menu, you'll also find plenty of deals along the way to keep morale high. So what are you waiting for? Download the Wendy's app today and start earning on every order. Okay, let's we good? We have Frank? Like, he's sitting beside me. Can we just start talking to
We're
him?
We're working on his camera.
Okay, we'll start talking to him. Frank, thanks so much for joining us. You're spending the second round in Vancouver.
I am.
And how are you liking the city so far? You're getting the best of our weather. We're not getting rain till September again.
It's quite good.
That's right. Any other weather takes before we get to the Canucks?
No.
Okay, fantastic.
Just really far from home. That's all.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, the Canucks take game one against the Edmonton Oilers. How did that game go in terms of what you were expecting to see in that series starting and what actually happened in game one?
Well, I don't think anyone had a 3-goal comeback and win in regulation on their bingo card. That's for sure. I looked at Wyatt next to me during the game and I said, if they can find a way to to tie this game, this place is going to explode. Yeah. And that's obviously what happened. The last 2 minutes and the drama was about as good as it gets, as the Oilers were pressing a bit. And that one Draisaitl look, not the one that went through Seelov's pads and came directly through the crease, but that one sort of goal line one tee that he put on net, he got way more on that than I thought that he would. And it kind of like stunned Seelov's up high. The ending was fantastic. I have really mixed views of game one for both teams, because I know that the Canucks liked where they were at. I thought they played fine. I don't know that they played great. And I don't, obviously the Oilers didn't. And so when I take a look back, yes, they won the game, and that's really all that matters in the end. But if we're talking process and where this is ultimately going to get to, you were trailing 4-1 for a big chunk of the game in which the Oilers were not good. And Seelovs, you guys hit on Skinner and you know, raised all the fair questions, but Seelovs was not good to start. He was swimming last night. And so I guess I'm just looking at all of that and saying that's probably the worst game you're going to get from the Oilers in this series. Connor McDavid wasn't really a factor the first time he didn't have a shot in a playoff series, playoff game in his career. How many more of those games are you going to get? And had you not won, what a missed opportunity that would have been. And I know that's not the hypothetical game that you get to play because you did win, but it was 4-1 and it was super quiet.
I definitely get where you're coming from. McDavid isn't going to be this quiet for the rest of the series, but I think to play devil's advocate, what I think a lot of people might be thinking is, well, it seemed like they were kind of unfortunate to be down 4-1 when you look at the bounce that went off Cole on the CC point shot, I believe it was, on the third goal, and even the fourth one, Hyman, sort of a harmless wrist shot off the rush, deflecting off Meyer's stick and fooling Seelovs there. And all the players, Rick Tocchet, and Rick Tocchet has never been afraid to criticize the Canucks. He's always super honest and open. And even he sort of said, I thought we were playing pretty well, even though we were down 4-1. So what would you sort of respond to that idea that, well, maybe they didn't deserve to be down 4-1 in the first place. And then when you look at the final two periods, they limited the Oilers to just 8 shots.
So what's the best case scenario? Like, had you, like, everything that you just outlined, like, let's say the Oilers got lucky on a couple, like, they're probably still down 2-1.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
So you're down 2-1. McDavid was a non-factor for the most part, and the Oilers didn't play well, and you gifted them a power play goal 40 seconds into the game, and like, there's, and Seelovs, like, they're just, I'm not taking the pessimistic view. I'm just saying, I could, like, let's reverse this and talk about this from the Oilers standpoint now. They have a game in which they probably shouldn't have been up 4-1, to use your point, and yet someone hands you a 4-1 lead on a silver platter and you don't close it out. Yikes.
Yeah.
I was listening to any of that. You just continue this conversation. We're setting up lights and stuff.
No worries.
That's good hosting. That's exactly what someone should do when they're hosting a show.
I wanted to ask you, one of the other turning points in the game, it felt like, was when Leon Draisaitl left in the second period, appeared to get hurt. When he came back in the third period, didn't look nearly as dangerous, right? In the first period, he was obviously a factor on both of Edmonton's first two goals. Have you heard anything about his status? And from an Oilers perspective, or how worried would you be about Leon's injury there?
So the official, it's interesting because yesterday after the game, Chris Knobloch said, cramping and
equipment
issue, which, like, I don't know what the equipment issue is.
Oh, my chest protector.
Or, yeah, my pants.
Oh, jeez. Gotta get me out of there.
Hate to break it to you, Leon. I walk around daily with tight pants. Sorry, that was too far. But when it comes to his status, they said today, day to day, and not a shock. I think I would be surprised if Drysdale doesn't play in game two. Like, if it is a lower back issue, which I think you also saw Zadorov take a run at him later in the game, if I'm remembering that correctly, and give him a shot in the back. You know, I think, to me, Rick Tocchet, I asked him this after the game last night. I said, when do you think the tide started to turn? And he said when the Lindholm goal went in late in the second period. I actually think that the true turning point in the game was when Drysdale went out with 8 minutes to go in the second. That's when it started to shift for me. That's when the table started to turn. The Oilers were a dysfunctional mess. Their lines were all over the place. They didn't handle things well on their bench, and they didn't play well. That's when the Canucks started dominating play, and that's kind of when that 22-minute stretch without a shot on goal started.
Do you think the Oilers have enough forward depth to succeed in this series if Drysdale ends up being hampered less than 100% effectiveness?
Do I think they have... How did you frame the question?
Do you think they have enough forward depth to still be successful, win this series? Yes. If, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's their significant advantage over the Canucks. I think the Canucks, I think they are built to and could be more than this, but they have played like a 1.5 line team these playoffs.
They have. And I saw you say that on Oilers Nation every day too. And we were talking about a lot of ifs yesterday, like on our keys to the Canucks actually winning this series, that a lot had to go right for them. I think a lot of it did go right last night. Like, one of them was win the goaltending battle.
Just think about what you're saying.
Yeah.
So Seelovs wasn't good, and you win the goaltending battle.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I would call that mostly a draw.
You would?
Dude, did you like the goals that Seelovs let in?
We just went over it in the first segment. There's one bad one on him.
Okay.
Right? Like,
I guess.
Skinner, I mean, I'm counting two or three that are like, okay, Stuart Skinner has to make a save there.
I'll be honest. I think both goalies.
I don't think either one is good. Like, that's what I'm saying. I didn't like any parts of Seelov's body language.
Absolutely.
I didn't like the way that he was sliding all over the crease. I didn't like that, frankly, that Rick Tocchet didn't go with Casey DeSmith to start the third period, because you're looking for a jolt down for two, and you're probably looking for DeSmith to knock the rust off after not playing a long time if you have to turn to him for game two.
Which they don't. They aren't going to DeSmith. They shouldn't. They just stick with Seelovs.
Well, you said they aren't. No, sorry, you said they shouldn't, but that doesn't mean they aren't.
I would be stunned if they go to DeSmith for game two.
Do you think Seelovs... Don't you think he looked nervous last night?
Yeah, I thought he had a game like that in Nashville too, though.
I don't. I never saw that at all against Nashville.
I don't think he had a game like that against Nashville.
He did. He hasn't had a game like that these playoffs.
But wouldn't you back your guy, considering how excellent he was against Nashville, especially because it's not like you got Thatcher Demko waiting in the wings and he's your plan B? It's Casey DeSmith, another guy who can be sort of up and down and hasn't had his starts in a while now.
I personally would be considering it now. I think he's got a dilemma on his hands, Rick Tocchet.
I think Seelovs is going to have a really strong game too. I think it's going to be same thing we saw in Nashville. He's going to come out. He's going to have a really, really strong game too. That's what I think. Here's the one thing I'm curious about.
But I want to answer Harm's question just a little bit more detail. Like, I know that on the score sheet he's there. Like, he's actually like playing minutes. But has Ilya Mikheyev played in these playoffs?
This is the best he's looked all year. Like, he was so bad in the regular season. Like, he led them in Corsi last night. That's the best only we've time seen Ilya Mikheyev play.
That is the worst compliment I've ever had. I mean, like, I don't even know that he's... Okay, so Hoglander. Sam Lafferty.
Yeah.
Oh, so Dakota Joshua...
Mr. Game One?
I called him Mr. Game One last night. So you can score game one. He was great in game one last round, but he disappeared the rest of the series. Go down the rest of the lineup. Where are you getting... So you're asking me, let's just operate under the hypothetical that Drysdale's out, which, by the way, for my money, he was the best player on the ice on either team in the first half of last night's game.
Yep.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's a good take. Yep.
So, oh, gee, thanks. So, all of mine have been garbage today except for that one. So that's
you great. Said I, it. The chat said it. No,
I never see the chat, but feel free to tweet me. If that's the hypothetical, like I still like, I think the Oilers have a clear advantage, and that's with Evander Kane having a horrible game last night.
Yeah, he was very bad.
Raw. That's with Corey Perry being mostly unnoticeable, like, and Connor McDavid. Like, there's just, I think they just have more. I do. I don't even know that that's opinion. It feels more like fact.
You're absolutely right. The thing that I think the Oilers didn't address in their post media, and the thing that I think a lot of the takes I'm seeing right now are just that, well, the Oilers are better than this. The Oilers are going to do better. And while that's absolutely true, none of the conversation is talking about, well, the conversation we were having was, but a lot of the conversations I've been hearing aren't, this is what the Canucks did well. This is why the Oilers struggled to create offense. And we spent the first half hour breaking all that down. It's not just as simple as, well, Connor McDavid's going to flip a switch. It's going to be all better. Connor McDavid needs his teammates to be a lot better than they were last night. And I'm not saying he's not the best player in the world.
But you're making my point for me. The Oilers were not very good last night and still up 4-1. And probably within all rights and likelihood should have won the game. So what you're hinging on and what you're saying is the Oilers are, you acknowledge that they're probably going to be better and that might be their worst game of the series. Might, and it's not a fact, but might. And they were still up 4-1 and the Canucks needed a massive borderline miraculous comeback to do it.
Yeah, but those bounces, right? That's what you're hoping if you're the Canucks. All the bounces went the Oilers' way last night and they lost at the end of the day.
I mean, I guess McDavid and other Oilers players would argue that the Canucks got, they didn't feel like the goals that the Canucks scored on the comeback were not as a result of structural breakdowns, but also bounces. JT Miller said himself, I've practiced that shot a million times in my life, and I don't know that I've ever scored on one of them, that redirect tip.
And Skinner has to have that. That was what we were talking about earlier.
But too. Does that go, out of 100 times, how many does that go in? Three?
One. Last night.
The most egregious goal to me was the Skinner one. Or
Lindholm.
No, actually, it's Garland.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Garland.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, I thought was pretty good last night.
But again, is that a lucky bounce, or is that your goalie just being bad? Because I would argue
that was the latter. He should have been more patient. Yeah, it was bad goaltending.
So that's what I'm saying. If you're Connor McDavid, you don't come out in the media and say, oh, lucky bounces.
But to be fair, he also acknowledged that they had a bounce too.
Yeah, he basically was saying like it was a weird game for us. It was a weird game for them.
So
we got out to a lead that we probably shouldn't have, and we gave up goals that we probably shouldn't have.
So if we're operating under this guise that, okay, well, the Canucks had a 4-1 lead and Edmonton was awful, like if you take away these bounces or whatever we're even talking about at this point, the Canucks were the better team structurally throughout that entire game. Like they were the better team last night.
Okay. Right? Maybe. So, I think it's close. Like, I don't think it's like 70-30 or 60-40. Yeah. Like, I don't think it's like that at all.
Sure. So that's what I'm saying is just that now you're in this position where you assume both teams are going to be better than they were last night. Right? Or
I'm not operating under that assumption.
Maybe the Oilers catch up.
I don't know how much
Canucks?
Better are the Canucks going to
sure,
be.
That's fair. But
because I think you're also proposing that they started at a level ground and these two teams are actually equal. And I don't see it that way.
Fair. Fair enough.
Right, because that's what we're basically saying. You're saying if these two teams are as good as each other, then you would think that they'd both get better. And what I'm saying is I think the Oilers are here and the Canucks are here. And the Oilers' best is a level that the Canucks haven't gotten to yet. That's how I see this series.
Yeah, that's fair. How concerned would you be, though, about, for example, we're discussing the forward group, and I fully agree with you. Edmonton's forward group is better than Vancouver's. Where I start to get worried if I'm Edmonton is looking at the blue line depth beyond that first pair of Ekholm and Bouchard. Nurse CC pair got lit up for four even strength goals, and it's sort of been a pattern for them. They weren't very good in the LA series and in the Vegas series last year. They were sort of problematic as well. When you look at Edmonton's blue line, what would your concern level be at? Because I expect a lot of areas like McDavid's going to be better. I expect some of their other forwards to step up. but I still think they're a little bit vulnerable in the back end. And that's where it seems like they give a Canucks team that doesn't create offense easily an opportunity to get into games. Like, that's the first time the Canucks have scored 5 goals in a game since early March when they beat the Winnipeg Jets 5-0 on home ice. And that feels like forever ago. So again, looking at that blue line, do you think that's something that is giving the Canucks an opportunity to get into the series?
Well, I think the way you see the Nurse and CC pair function for Edmonton is kind of the crux of their issues as a team. They repeatedly shoot themselves in the foot. And, you know, I wrote this today. It's going to go one of two ways. It's either the Oilers are going to actually learn a lesson and they're going to limit that, and they're going to have a game potentially later in the series where they have a lead and they don't gag on themselves. Or it's just going to be this same thing at time after time. And that's what's doomed their playoffs of old. And I think rightly, wrongly, fairly, unfairly, the Nurse CC pairing has been right kind of at the center of the, it's okay to give up singles and doubles, but when you're giving up home runs, like that's how you lose playoff series. And so the point that I made today was like, they may survive. You can have a game like that. If you're the Oilers, the reason you're confident is like, you're like, well, we haven't had a game like that yet. These playoffs, you can have a game like that where you cough up and blow an opportunity like that. It can happen once in a playoff run. They might be able to overcome it against the Canucks. But I can tell you for damn sure, you're not going to be doing that against the Colorado Avalanche or Dallas Stars and hoping that you're going to win a Stanley Cup.
You know, one takeaway I had just watching all these playoffs, especially these ones, is whichever team gets through is going to have a real tough challenge on their hands with whoever they face.
Unless those two teams can beat the heck out of each other.
That's a great point.
And that very well may happen and make seven.
Yep.
And to finish off Harm's question about their D pair, I feel pretty good about the idea. If you're an Edmonton fan, I'd feel pretty good about the idea of Kulak and Desharnais as your third pair. Like, I think those guys have been steady. I think Kulak's actually been fine. And there's a healthy amount of Ian Cole-ish production from Desharnais. Like, he's not going to give you a ton of offense. He's not going to be flashy, but he just kind of gets the job done. And I think there's some of that with his size that's valuable to Edmonton on their back end.
Yeah, Desharnais was super interesting because he's come a long way from past playoffs. I think he's improved a lot in the regular season. But I wondered at one point if he was, like, if he's being slowed down by an injury or something. Because
he's just generally slow.
Like, I know he's slow, but he looked extra slow last night. Not that he got exposed for it, but I was a little bit surprised that, like, there were moments in the game where he just didn't move and would straight try and whack a guy. And
dude, when you have a 7'8" reach, like, you can kind of just whack away.
I know what you mean, but
sorry for that, Quads.
Get Troy Stetcher in there. That's my take. I've been told
I was having the Noah Juulsen conversation yesterday.
I was.
Was it you or
no? I don't think Noah Juulsen should get in the lineup. Like, Ian Cole was bad, and I said this in the opening segment. Ian Cole, like, again, those first 3 goals were on Ian Cole. And
oddly enough, this is going to sound an absolute, this is not a take. This is just an observation. Like, yeah, he was way more assertive at the offensive blue line than he was at any point in the Nashville series. Like, he had the puck on his stick a bunch, which probably is a scary thought, but he actually was, like, making some things happen at the other end of the ice.
He was better in the third, too. Like, that's the thing.
It was kind of like Ian Cole giveth and Ian Cole taketh. I mean, there's certainly a part of that. And I was like, damn, I was like, you know, if you can kind of gloss over the idea that, you know, three ended up in the back of your net as, you know, a result of almost directly or indirectly off of his stick, I kind of liked it. It's like if you can get past that, it's, yeah, like,
if you want me at my Ian Cole at the offensive blue line, you need me at my,
yeah,
here's the puck. Go ahead. Have a shot. Why don't you have a power play?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess. Yeah. If you can get past the fact that I'm 290 pounds, I might be a decent enough looking guy.
He's got a good beard, you know, a little Yukon Cornelius stuff going on there. I long for
he's
that.
He's a gamer, man. I love Ian Cole. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, he should stay in the lineup. I don't think any lineup changes coming.
One thing I wanted to ask you was,
by the way, Phil DiGiuseppe, PDG, that was his best game of the playoffs.
Have you been to Commercial Drive yet since you've been here?
I don't know what that is.
It's like Little Italy. Oh my God. Okay. So the reason that I thought of this, Phil DiGiuseppe came here, been here for two seasons, came on Canucks Convo, and nobody had told him about Commercial Drive. And I was like, dude, there's all these delis. You'll be right at home. And he was right at home.
Did he go?
I think so. He told me he was going to. I never followed up with him.
He was probably just yes.
No. He went. And you're going to go too. But anyway, sorry.
I want to go to the Canadiens game tonight.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
I want to go to... I've never been to a Seas game. I'd like to see it.
It's such a good atmosphere.
Is it far from here?
No, it's not. No. Really, really nice place to go. Let's get
what
to anyone else.
What a day for a ball game.
Yeah. Do you guys want to get to anyone else?
Yeah, let's do it.
Fire smooth away, transition.
Do you want to read it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Anyone else? Presented by the Vancouver Canadiens. The Vancouver Canadiens are back at the Knack. Catch fireworks, giveaways, Friday nooners, and superstar appearances all spring and summer long. Get your tickets at CanadiansBaseball.com. The Seas are giving away a record of 33 giveaways this season. That includes 6 koozies giveaways for the first 6 Saturdays of the season from all their beer partners, and a giveaway every Sunday for Family Fun Sunday for kids 12 and under. The Canadiens have been back at the net this week, had a superstar appearance on the 7th with Marco Estrada. They have a nooner at the net tomorrow on the 10th and a Family Fun Sunday on the 12th where kids 12 and under can run the bases. For tickets, call 604-872-5232 or go to CanadiansBaseball.com.
I just want everybody to know that script did not say half the stuff Harmon was saying. He was ad-libbing on the fly, and he absolutely crushed it. I just want everybody to know that, because
I had to learn from the first time.
Oh.
Quads was like, hey, can you do this ad read? And I like never do ad reads. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And he's like, yeah, the script's right there. And it was a Ron Burgundy moment.
It was like, April. I'm Ron Burgundy. So you had a Joe Biden teleprompter moment?
Literally.
Pause. Did you see the one last? He had one like 2 days ago where he was like, yeah, I had this teacher one time in elementary school. And it was like, Mr. And then he said the first name. And then he's like, Mr. Ron, last name.
Oh, no.
Like, oh, Sleepy Joe. Oh, come on, man.
I didn't see that. But I gave Harmon a script that said April all over it.
A bunch of April dates, and it was like May 2nd or something, and I didn't catch on.
It happens to the best.
You crushed that. You crushed that.
Dude, I need tickets to the Nats game tonight.
Yeah, I will show you where to get them. Someone wants you to zoom in on my playoff beard. Do we have that capability? I guess not. It's okay. One day. I see. No, I'm not going to talk about it. Yeah, okay, so a lot of Commercial Drive conversation. I'll actually tell you.
Am I getting roasted today in the chat?
Yeah.
Okay. Am I getting this is what I would ask. Am I getting ratioed today on Twitter?
I didn't know about Twitter. I haven't checked your Twitter.
No, nothing today, but.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Frank, I know it might come as a surprise to you, but the Canucks fans watching our YouTube show don't love when you poke holes in the Canucks game.
But I can't come on here at the beginning of the season when no other national reporter is saying the Canucks are going to be a playoff team and be an early adopter, and then pick the Canucks to win in 6 games over the Preds in round 1, and then come on here and blow smoke up your ass.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways. And that's fine. No, disagreement's good. And I'm still, I want someone to chart out the path for me for the Canucks to win the series. You said it yourself. There's a lot of ifs. It's if.
But now it became wins.
No.
Pull it up.
They become wins when you're 4 games into the series. Sure. Then you have a 3-1 lead. That's but wins.
They are on their way to becoming wins. What were our keys last night? It was swarm the Oilers defense. Don't let them get the puck to Connor McDavid. Okay, check. Win your matchup against Connor McDavid, even strength. Check. Leon Draisaitl, tough one because not fully healthy. They won the matchups at 5-on-5, okay? Stay out of the box. They go once into the box. The Oilers have 100% power play on this. Okay, check. Canucks did that only once. They limited their
That's
power
not
play.
That's check. The Oilers were perfect in special teams. They scored on the power play, and they did not give up a goal but on the then, penalty kill. What? Like, but, that does not go into the win column for the Canucks. Like, stop your nonsense.
The checkbox.
Take off your green-colored glasses. Stop.
The checkbox was to not take penalties. They took one penalty in the game.
That is like,
that's a check.
They could have taken three on the first shift.
And how many did they actually take?
One. Okay.
None.
One.
So tell me, Frank.
They still gave up the goal.
So
and
tell
they still
me.
Didn't score on the power play. Stop your nonsense. Like, seriously. That doesn't count as a check.
The key to victory wasn't score on the power play.
No.
The key to victory was stay out of the box.
Let me make you one promise in this series. I don't know how this is gonna go. No one does. If the gulf on special teams remains as large as it is mm-hmm. heading into this series, the Vancouver Canucks do not have a prayer against the Oilers.
Absolutely well, agree.
Here's the thing. We 100% in previewing this series said that we think the Canucks can hang with the Oilers 5-on-5, right? Even the Kings somehow, like
12-12,
5-on-5. But you get into a special teams battle. You get
your doors blown off.
You're going to get your doors blown off. But one thing that I think you have to consider is as the series goes longer, it almost kind of like by the time we get to if the Canucks can somehow survive the first few games, then you get to games 5, 6, and 7. The whistles tend to go away later in the series. And we saw this. You look at the game 7s between Boston and Toronto. You look at game 6 between Vancouver and Nashville. The game 7 between Dallas and Vegas, it ends up being like one power play, two power plays for each team, a lot of 5-on-5 play. Well, now all of a sudden the Canucks have a chance at being competitive, at potentially winning. It's these games at the start of a series where
do you know what
you worry a little bit that a lot of power plays, that's where you might get into trouble.
Do you know what the Canucks net, no, sorry, not net, but penalties taken per 60 is and where they rank in the league?
No,
I don't.
3.7 penalties per 60, which is almost 8 minutes a game. Do you honestly think that they're going to go through the rest of this series taking one a game?
No.
No. But they did last night.
Oh, my God. Do you know the million wild and like insane things that'll never happen again from last night?
I think you guys need a bet.
Oh, bet whatever you want. What do you want? What do you want to bet on?
You give me odds here.
On what?
Hang on. Series win. You picked Oilers. I picked Canucks.
Okay.
We should have done this at start, but I'll
even spot you a win to start. Go ahead.
Give us odds here. Hang on. I'll pull up the odds. You guys keep talking. This is going to take me a second.
This is really entertaining.
I got him right here.
Yeah. Okay. To win the series, give me the updated odds.
Canucks are +115. Oilers are -135.
Pretty close, Frank.
Canucks started at +220.
Dude, they have a 1-0 lead. The implied win percentage heading into the series was like 71%.
Yeah. Now what's it at?
Now it's at like 55.
That's right.
Ish.
Sorry. What was the number again, Grady?
-135. So $100 returns $174.07 on the Oilers. Conversely, $100 on the Canucks returns $215.
Okay, what +115 on the Canucks, right?
Correct.
That's what it is. Okay, let's get to our bet365 bet of the day.
Wait a second. Wait.
We'll finish this in a second. Brought to you by bet365, a proud partner of Canucks Conversation. Open an account with bet365 today and bet on a huge range of markets. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at bet365. Be sure to use code VANBONUS when you sign up for an account. Today, we're keeping it simple. +115 for the Canucks to win this series. We're crushing it. We're going for that. Okay, now you and I, let's figure this out, Frank. What's our bet? I'm already growing a beard.
I'm not
going
to sit here and out-wallet you.
I'm already growing a beard because I lost a bet.
That's not a beard.
It is.
That's not even the start of a beard.
Look at if I get to the light right.
Those are whiskers, bud.
Well, I'm not shaving.
Peach fuzz.
No one said I had to actually have a beard by the end of it. I just had to not shave, which is what I'm doing.
But if there's nothing growing and you're not shaving, what's the difference?
I think there's got to be like whoever loses a series has to rep the other team's like gear, like a shirt.
But I don't ever I'm not repping gear. I don't care who wins. This is a
Canucks
totally
Army.
Impartial.
No,
Canucks
no,
Army
like,
shirt.
That's not, what I'm saying. Not the like, Vancouver Canucks, the Canucks Army. You'll wear some Canucks Army gear.
Oh, well, that's easy.
I mean, you've got a lot more followers than me, but you got to wear some Canucks Army gear and take a selfie and be like, I was wrong. Canucks in 7. Woo. Quads was right. Maybe if you want to call me a better analyst, whatever it is you want
to
do.
Okay, so I'll do that, but what are you going to do for me?
The same. I'll put Oilers Nation gear on.
But that doesn't mean anything to me.
Oh. I don't know. Daily face-off gear.
That doesn't help me either.
Well, you come up with something. I came up with mine. Dinner. You got to wear Canucks Army. Yeah, well, I mean, I'd like to go to dinner with you, Frank. That should be if you lose the bet.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a win for me. I get to go to dinner with the quad. Oh, I don't know. I need to think on this.
Take your time. Huh. Let's get some listener questions while Frank thinks about that.
Let me think about that.
Yeah.
Someone throw a proposal into the chat.
I like this.
Let's get spicy. And nothing weird.
Quads can't talk baseball for several months. No baseball references.
Well, Frank's a baseball guy too. Frank would not like to see that. Frank loves when I talk baseball.
Loves the Phillies crushing the Jays.
Frank and I talked a lot of Phillies in the playoffs last year.
I like the Phillies a lot. Side note, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I was covering the Canucks Flyers at this October, like, 2022. I've never seen a sports city. Like, the Phillies were in the playoffs at that time. Like, I'm not exaggerating when I say 50% of people just walking around in downtown were repping Phillies gear.
Yeah.
It was
go to the
wild.
Suburbs, but it's even nuts, more nuts.
I've never, ever seen anything like that in any city.
I'm so lucky to have grown up there. It is an amazing sports city.
What's bigger there? Like,
it's
NFL,
Eagles,
right?
By far.
Okay.
But when the Phillies get to the World Series, like, you start to ask questions, like, which one?
Yeah.
Has this become a Phillies town? Remember, they went 2 years in a row in 08 or 09? Like,
Ryan Howard.
That kind of became a thing, but it's always Eagles first. Chase Utley was
on that team, right?
Yeah, the Eagles in Philly are like the Canucks here, Leafs. Pick another crowded, big sports market.
And interesting.
Like, the Canucks are kind of, no offense to the Lions, the only game in town, but major pro sports. But
yeah. Vancouver Canadiens are going to deny you access tonight. That's the thing. Rob Manfred, I know he's only there for 4 more years, announced his retirement at the start of the year. Remember that? He said, I'm going to be here for 4 more years. He keeps bringing up Vancouver as a expansion option. We don't have a stadium.
Does anyone have a bet for me yet?
Huh?
Anyone have a bet?
No, no one's coming up with anything. Quads has to have his chair lowered completely down for 20 episodes. What does that look like? I've never lowered this to the max.
Oh. wait.
Can you see him over the laptop?
Yes, please.
For 20 episodes? I can't work down here.
What an arbitrary number.
I can't work down here for 20 episodes.
Come on, you have to agree, Frank. That is.
If Frank likes it, I'll do it.
Yeah, doesn't really do it for me.
That doesn't do it.
That would make me watch 20 episodes of Canucks conversation. That would be punishment.
I ain't shaving my head. That ain't happening.
All right, on to anyone else.
You keep thinking about it.
What do we got today?
That's the thing. We don't have much. It's mostly people talking about you.
Talking shit about me.
Well, that's the thing. And this is what I appreciate about our listeners, because there's a lot of nonsense on Twitter. Nobody really took it too far. Other than this one guy. No, I'm just joking. Someone did say Ian Cole should now be known as Ian Pohl with his performance in the first period. That was Gnar that said that. I like that. Ian Pohl. Thoughts?
Be a sick nickname.
Yeah. Ian Pohl. Okay. Yeah. I don't think there's anyone else coming in today. People were asking a lot of questions, and I've never seen this before, but our chat was so busy that I can't scroll to the top of it anymore. So I think some came in
earlier.
I think
that's a good problem to have.
It is a good problem. I've never seen our chat this lively. So Frank, thanks so much for joining us. Weird segment of anyone else as we got to zero listener questions. Ty Davidson, maybe loser has to wear a terrible shirt for all their hits.
Quads does that without asking sometimes.
This is a nice shirt.
He does. He gets
sometimes.
He's got some arty party type shirt.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about that. Selling the, did you see this?
I did see that. I thought that was
cease and desist.
Very on brand.
Yeah. We'll see.
Do you want to, like, pie him in the face?
That would actually be kind of fun.
You'd have to fly back out here, though.
Well, but no, I guess if the Canucks are winning, I'll be out here.
Perfect. Yeah. Let's do it. But wait, that's me winning if the Canucks win. If they lose, you win, then you'd have to fly back out here.
Oh, I'll be back out here at some point. I will pie you in the face on air. If not, I need to wear a Canucks Army shirt.
Hat.
You want a hat and shirt?
Hat and shirt.
All right.
And it's going to be a tweet.
And a tweet, yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. I think these are fair terms.
Camera can't see it, but we just shook hands.
Let's go.
All right. This is great. Oh, we had an actual anyone else. The number's going up. What does Zadorov's next contract start with? It's going up. Starts with a 5. Not a 6, right? Do you think it starts with a 6? Okay, good. 5.
He thinks he's getting 6x6. Somewhere.
Sorry, say that again.
I think he probably thinks that he's getting 6x6. And I will say, I think what's interesting spending time around the Canucks is that Rick Tocchet, again, for like the 8th time unprompted, has been like, what a locker room guy. This guy is fun. He keeps the mood light. And it was almost like, hey, Patrick, are you listening? Like we got to find a way to keep this guy.
Yeah.
And it seems like the market as a whole is really taken to him too.
Yeah. And I wonder if they can afford both him and Hronek.
I don't really see a path to do that.
Yeah.
Trade Hronek. Sinochek, can you talk about how last night's game really showed how PD needs better line mates? Yeah. Again, you brought up McKayev earlier. We're talking about how this is the best he's looked all year.
Well,
Nils Höglander gets his first playoff point.
The only time McKayev is noticeable is when he's flubbing a scoring chance.
Yeah.
Right?
Look, and you got that one on net.
Höglander, you feel for him because here's a young guy that's made so much progress this year. Is it fair to shoulder him with the expectations of a full-time top six role and you're the guy and we have no plan B? Probably not, but he needs to be a lot better. I think with the ice shrinking in the playoffs, there's an adjustment period right now where he just isn't making poised decisions with the puck, turning too many of them over. Again, you like to see him with the assist there, but Höglander and McKayev are dragging Pettersson down because I thought he was sharp. Pettersson, this was the most dangerous we've seen him in a while. I thought he had intact first mentality with a shot.
I hated his body language again, though.
Really?
That one shot that he had, the one tee where he just missed it, and he was like,
I don't like that.
I don't like any part of that.
I don't like that either. It's fitting that I'm wearing sunglasses while I talk about that. Last one, Jeremy Lee. This one's for you, Frank. We'll close it on this. What does, he called you Frankie, need to see to be convinced? My brother's name's Frankie. Need to see.
That's what I was known by growing up.
Oh, you were known as Frankie?
Yeah.
Huh. Is your name actually like Frankie, or because my brother's name is Francesco?
It's actually Francis.
Francis!
Oh. Don't call me Francis.
I will not call you Francis.
Do not call me. What's the other thing you're not supposed to call me?
I'm not going to say it because I'm not supposed to call you.
All right.
Oh, that'd be a good punishment. If I win, you got to put we that already in brackets on it. No, as a nickname.
No,
Frank?
No.
There's the nickname.
I haven't heard of this.
No, Daddy Face Off.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah. Now you made me say it. Now Frank's never coming back.
In trouble.
People are saying Frank needs to wear the green man suit.
Yeah, green man suit. Okay, Jeremy Lee, this one's for you, Frank. What does Frank need to see to be convinced that the Canucks are the better team in this series?
I need to see consistent depth scoring.
Fair.
And I don't know that they have it in them. I really don't.
Fair. That's fair enough. Okay, anything else either of you gentlemen wanted to get to before we close it out? We're going way over time.
Can't just be one Dakota Joshua goal or two
in game one.
It can't. That can't be the totality of your depth scoring.
Leon Draisaitl's availability is going to affect this conversation heavily, for sure.
Not for me, because again, it should just come back to Canucks and what they're doing.
Well, I mean, I mean, it's going to be easier to score if Draisaitl's out of the lineup.
By virtue of what? Having the puck more?
Yeah.
What's your thought process? Like, walk through what?
Well, right now, the Lindholm line is matched up against Draisaitl, right?
Okay.
What is that line matching up against if Draisaitl's out? Ryan McLeod? Ryan Nugent Hopkins?
But are Edmonton's two wingers better than who they're matching up against?
No. No, I don't think so.
One point that we didn't mention, by the way, a little bit of a sidebar here, but without Henrique, Janmark with McDavid. I wonder if that's part of the reason McDavid was quiet is what's Janmark doing?
I don't think that's no. I mean, it's a fair question. This is the best player in the world who like you could give him two right arms and he'd still for the most part.
Well, he had two wingers last night.
Here's the question. Who would you have more confidence in? Matthias Janmark or Ilya Mikheyev?
Oh, there's a question.
It's still definitely Matthias.
Okay, Frank, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And okay, we'll close it out there. For my co-host, Armin Dial, and our technical producer, Grady Sass, thanks again to Frank Saravelli for joining us. My name is Dave Petrelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Canucks Conversation.
Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.